This week on Potlatch, John Oktolik, chairman of the Point Hope Whaling Commission. John Oktolik heads the Whaling Commission in Point Hope. He represents that village in the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. In an interview with Mo Wassily, he explained how the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission started.
The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission was formed last fall, sometimes in the month of August and September. And there was a calling for all the captains, meetings from all over the coast of Alaska that do whale. And it was the beginning of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. And of course, why this was set up was because of the ban, total ban of the subsistence hunt to the Eskimo Whaling Nation. And at the time the ban, of course, the Eskimos were not oriented that there was a plan of a total ban. And since finding this out as late as that, and since this was something that the Eskimos are really cannot do without, as far as the food sources is concerned, and for this reason the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission was established. Since the quota of 12 take and 18 strikes was established by the International Whaling Commission, the next question was to how to allocate the village quota. Was in the minds to the commission members, and for this reason the some of the captains and along with the commission members were called to have a meeting at Barrow, and through this meeting they allocated the best way they know how of so many whales to per whaling village. And as it turned out that Samunga got one, Gamble got one, Kivalian got one, and Point Hope got two, Wainwright two, Barrow three, Nooksett one, and Butter Island one. And this is kind of based on a village populations.
Wassily asked John Oktolik if Eskimos participated in the decisions of the International Whaling Commission.
There was no participation as far as the enforcing people were concerned. And in one meeting, the commission members adopt that 12. Of course, there was nothing they can do about it, and this was given to them by the International Whaling. And as to the time-wise, there was nothing they can do until the next meeting called for the International Whaling Commission, and so they adopted, and they all know that 12 was a very small number, meeting the needs of each villages, but they did what they can with the quota. by allocating it to the villages.
Buffy St. Marie singing about civilization. Barrow whalers caught one more whale than the International Whaling Commission allocated them, but barrow whalers argued that two of the whales caught were not bowheads. As a result of the dispute, the Alaska Eskimo Whalers Commission met with an official of the federal government, according to John Oktolik.
I've attended the last meeting with the administrator from the National Oceanic Administration, administration, which is Richard Frank, and there at this meeting we learned that the position of the enforcers was that the Inuktitut, what we called, were specified as the same as bowhead.
Oktolik said he was disturbed about the methods enforcers used to count whales.
There was no input whatsoever as far as accounting is concerned, which is past 3 years before 1978, and the enforcers never did ask for support from the villages, and it is kind of hurting that as far as account is concerned, there if they would help support from the whaling crews, that maybe the figure would have been higher than the past count.
John Oktolik believes that the International Whaling Commission method of counting whales is inadequate.
Definitely the quota would have been higher if there was the counting methods. Well, of course, it was only through observation. And like I said, you know, it was very limited due to the weather and being just in and out, and some days you don't have any observers right out there observing, whereas they should. And there was a limitation of setting up their counters in certain positions. And what does I mean? I mean by this that, like in front of the crews. If they would set up a camp right over there at the front, and also in the back, rear of the whaling camps, and some right in the center, this would have been a kind of efficient setup. as far as counting. And normally from past experience that on the ice condition, although there's an open lead all the way through and the camps are all set up in a way from first camp to the other, about 3 miles or 5 miles, you know, just depending on the leadways. And the people and the crews up at front, they can observe through the day some whales going by, and still right some of the crews in a member in the center and some in a rear will not observe any. What this tells us is that some whales that hits right down the main lead, down at the front, are just directing out and not being observed by the middle or the rear crews. Some whales can come right directly to the middle sections whereas the people up front will not observe these. And in the rear also, they can some whales migrate when there's a big body of water right directly from southeast and missing all the front and middle, and still be observed by the rear crews.
Wassily asked John Aktolik how many whales a year Point Hope people think they need.
In one of the meetings, we were asked to go into the village committee meetings and try to establish the number of needs, the least number, what we can come out of. And through this committee and of discussing about half hour, the Point Hope recommended the least number of 6 will be sufficient enough to take care of this village of Point Hope.
John Aktolik explains how Point Whalers got an extra whale allocated for Kivalina.
There was a negotiation made during one of the meetings at Barrow, in case one village does not fill their quota or doesn't make a strike. And knowingly this negotiation, when I was at Barrow, along with the Kivalina Commission member and with the enforcers, I've tracked down the method of getting the Kivalina quota, and through the enforcers I've been able to get the release. And the way the method how I should go about getting it, and I got this established through agreement of the Kivalina representative and along with the enforcers. Finally, Kivalina gave us a notice by message that they released their quota, and of course they didn't make any strike, and the Kivalina was given one extra strike just in case if they did not make a kill at the first. They have a second strike coming, so we got that also.
John Aktolik of Point Hope. Next, we hear an Apache church song by Folkways Records.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, in any flying car, Jesus had his dream, Jesus had his dream. In any flying car, echo says, Jesus, echo says, Jesus, echo says, in any flying car, echo says, Jesus had his dream, Jesus had his dream. In every flying car,
some captains were, just before I leave, were just telling me they would keep on hunting, and as far as their, I mean, their quota was filled as of two, but then they were thinking of trying to get some English like what Barrow is was imposing. And so immediately after the meetings with the enforcers in Barroway, sent an urgent message to the Point Hope whalers that they should start whaling immediately. And getting the quota from Kivalina, which was a very good thing, I mean, they were waiting for that. And of course, I let them know that this was all can be had if the only the word is needed from the Kivalina releasing that quota to us. And when the message came out, I put up a notice at the store that this can be had, and about an hour later, there was one crew out on the ice. So what this tells is that the spirit is there, but there were still, as far as the regulation was concerned, they were really trying to go abide by that. All the whaling stations, all the whaling villages are did a very commendable thing by in their behavior as far as living up to their quotas. And I know definitely the temptation was there as far as the whaling, the weather, the water. It was very favorable, but then everybody was in after the second whale, especially here at Point Hope. After the second whaler, I made a trip to Anchorage, and along with the, when I was flying down, there were two captains from Point Hope going down that way, and I asked them personally what they were doing down here, you know, going down to Anchorage. Well, they just said, well, what can you do? There's no more hunt to whaling at Point Hope, so we want to see our city alive a little bit.
Wassily asked what effect the whale limits would have on the Point Hope food supply.
Definitely there is an impact of that as far as the future references, storing meat for coming fall and winter. I don't think there will be much impact on the other games, even at that, you know. As far as the Point Hope hunters there, I knew them pretty well that whatever they can catch, whatever they can store is always, they've been doing it. And I didn't see any much difference of trying to get more on the other species, on the other games. This is the thing that, as far as the subsistence hunt, you know, as far as the diet is concerned, they do need that, and they need to store any kind of games if they can get them. And the like any the Caucasian food, you know, you have to change your diet once in a while, and a little change is something good on a table. You cannot eat one species at all times there. It's just like any other foods.
John Ektolik explains the ancient Point Hope tradition of sharing the whale catch.
This was carried down to them by their ancestors, and which is to me a very good established a way of sharing. What I'm talking about is the shares of a whale. When the whale is caught, you have 9 shares, and above the 9 shares were still some shares available, which is the head part of the whale is divided among the other crew members, which are not luckily to get into 9 shares. And of course, number one is the captain shear, which is from the midsection right to the rear. And the second shear is the top portion, front portion, which is top of the whale, which is goes to the crew members of the successful captain, and the lower part of the captain crew's share is divided by two other crews that came in first. It's cut in half and divided. It's divided among the crews. And fourth and a fifth is the tongue, and it's also divided by two crew members that came in after the two that divided the breast part, and the other two is that the lips, it's also divided among the two crews, and the midsection, just about a foot wide all around, and that's also cut in two and divided by the other two. And of course the last portion of that is that the head is divided among the after night crews. Like anybody else, for self-gain, there's used to be some problems of, although definitely that one entitled to is somebody else came after him there and trying to take a share. And this creates kind of conflict between the two, but then the village of Point Hope back in the mid-50s, the city council adopt the old way and through resolution, and along with the shares that was written down in a paper, and according to the sizes and where it should be. And of course I was a secretary of the Native Council in those days, and I did most of the work as far as the paperwork was concerned. And after it was adopted, of course, we before the next comes Springfront, the regulations, written regulations, were distributed to all the captains, and from then on there is hardly any conflicts on assures. So what this tells us that the natives on a local level can regulate as far as the whale hunting is concerned, they can regulate and really live up to it. I mean, you know, really abide the regulation. Thank you.
How's the World Treating You, Chet Atkins, guitar. The new Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission regulations are more evidence that Eskimos can regulate their own whaling, according to John Oktalik.
For the 1978 problem, we used to have some losses by some of the crew members just using a shoulder gun without any line attachment to it. And of course, this whale can get away and even sink, but without the liner, you don't know what happened. So this regulation is very good, I guess, and it should be imposed upon from here on in, not only for this 1978 whaling method, but then it should be carried on from here on in. It is a much saving factor. I mean, when the attachment is made, you got the float which tells you even if the whale will get away, just long there's a water that the float comes out, and you know where the whale is, which is very, very good method.
Mo Wassily asked John Oktalik about the future of whaling in Point Hope.
The enforcers are planning to go all out to get the about the approximate estimation of the populations of whale, and not only on a by visual counting, also they're planning to use some sonar systems, boat observations, plane observations, and also the winter hopperings of whales and the spring hopperings of whales. And we're hoping that the counters will do all the efforts they can, and I know they're doing it at Barrow, and hoping they'll come out with a better as far as the population of whales. I hope they'll come out with a larger number than they had before, which is, I know the estimate was 1,300, what the enforcers use as a recommendation to the IWC, the figure what they use. And from what I learned, I guess the present count at Barrow has exceeded 1,300, and whales are still migrating north, and been observed at Point Hope, and I know better population will be coming out from this count.
John Oktalik, chairman of the Point Hope Whaling Commission, in an interview with Moses Wassily. I'm Jeff Kennedy.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.